The spirit of Colin's mother followed. He didn't like looking into her face. Though she was a spirit, and her features were indistinct in that glow they had, she still looked too much like Colin.
"Richard, may I talk with you?"
His footsteps echoed through the vast hall. "If you wish."
"I wish to tell you about my daughter, Colin."
Richard stopped and turned back to the spirit.
"Why?"
"Because she is part of me. She was of my flesh, just as you are of your mother's flesh. Colin is my connection to the world of life, the place I once was, where you must return."
Richard started out once more.
"I am home. I have no intention of returning to that bitter world. If you wish me to carry a message to your daughter, I'm sorry, I can't. Leave me."
He lifted his hand to banish her from the hall, but she raised her hands, pleading for him to stay his power.
"I do not wish you to carry a message. Colin knows I love her. I wish to talk to you."
"Why?"
"Because of what I did to Colin."
"Did to her? What did you do to her?"
"I instilled in her a sense of duty. Confessors don't have love, Colin. They have duty. That was what I told her. To my shame, I never explained what I meant by that. I fear I left her no room for life. More than any confessor I knew, Colin wanted to live life, to relish it. Duty denied her much of that. That is what makes her such a good protector of her people. She wants them to have a chance at their joy because she sees so clearly what she was denied. She is left to take small pleasures as she can."
"Is there a point to this?"
"Don't you enjoy life, Richard?"
Richard walked on.
"I understand about duty. I have been born to duty. I am now done with it. I am done with everything."
"You too misunderstand what I meant about duty. To the right person, the person who is truly born to it, duty is a form of love through which all is possible. Duty is not always a denial of things, but an expansion of them to others. Duty is not always a chore, but is best carried out with love. Will you not return to her, Richard? She needs you."
"Colin has a husband now. I have no place in her life."
"You have a place in her heart."
"Colin said she would never forgive me."
"Richard, have you never said something you didn't mean in desperation? Have you never wished you could take back the words?"
"I can't return to her. She is married to another. She has given an oath, and she has... I won't go back."
"Even if she is married to another, even if you cannot be with her, even if it breaks your heart to know you can't have her, don't you love her enough to mend her heart, to put her heart at peace? Is it all you and none of it her in this love you have?"
Richard glared at the spirit.
"She has found happiness in my absence. She doesn't need anything from me."
"Do you find enjoyment in the rose, Richard?"
Richard walked on.
"Yes, it's very nice, thank you."
"Will you consider going back, then?"
Richard wheeled to the spirit of Colin's mother.
"Thank you for the rose. Here are 1,000 in repayment, so you may not say I owe you anything in return."
Richard cast out his hand, and the air filled with roses. Rose petals flew and swirled in a red blizzard.
"I'm sorry I could not make you understand, Richard. I can see that I only bring you pain. I will leave you."
When she vanished, the floor was bespattered with red petals, looking like nothing so much as a pool of blood. Richard sank to the floor, feeling too sick to stand. Soon he would be one of them, a spirit, and he would not have to endure this limbo where he twisted between worlds. He had food when he wanted it, he had sleep when he wanted it, but he couldn't maintain life here indefinitely. This was not the world of life. Soon enough he would be one of them, and finished with this emptiness that was his life. Colin had once filled that emptiness. She had once been everything to him. He had trusted her. He had thought his heart had been safe in her care. He had imagined more than was true. How could he have been such a fool? Was it all such illusion? Richard's head came up. He peered across the hall. He went through a mental inventory of the items stored here. The gazing font. It was there, across the hall. He knew how to use it. He rose and crossed the hall, going between two of the columns to find the stone gazing font. It had two basins in two tiers, the lower one waist high and the upper just above his head. Each basin was a long rectangle. Carved into the glittering charcoal gray stone were ornate symbols of instruction and power. The lower basin was brim full of a silver liquid, appearing similar to the slif, but very different, he knew. Richard lifted the silver ewer from the shelf below and dipped it in the lower basin. He emptied the ewer into the upper basin. He continued until the upper basin was loaded with its charge of the gazing liquid. Richard leaned across the lower basin to place his hands on the proper symbols, spread wide to each side. He read the ancient words before him as he leaned in, hands pressed to the gazing keyways. When the words were said, he focused his mind on the person he wished to gaze upon. As he did this, he let slip a small cord of power to release the liquid in the upper font. Across the entire knife-edge front of the upper basin, the silver liquid spilled out in a thin, silvery sheet before his face. In that waterfall of gazing liquid, Richard saw the person he called in his mind. Callan. His chest tightened at seeing her. He almost gasped, almost called out her name in anguish. She was in her white confessor's dress. The familiar contours of her face made him ache with longing. She was near her rooms, her bedroom in the confessor's palace. It was night there. Richard could feel his heart hammering against his ribs as he watched her glide to a halt at the door. Drefn slipped up behind her. He put his hands on her shoulders, giving them a squeeze as he leaned close, putting his mouth by her ear. "Colin, my wife, my love, are you ready to go into bed? I've had a hard day. I so look forward to a night of your lustful passion." Richard released the font. He lifted his fists as he staggered back. The gazing font exploded apart, heavy pieces of rock driven ahead of huge gouts of flame and smoke. Shards of stone whistled through the hall, disappearing into the distance. Massive chunks of stone wailed as they rose up into the air, lifted on a raging inferno until they lost their upward momentum and dropped back down to shatter into fragments and dust. The gazing liquid flooded the floor. In each droplet and pool, Richard could see Colin's face. He turned his back and stalked away. A furnace of flame blasted the floor, evaporating each droplet, yet he could still perceive her face in the tiniest mist of it filling the air. He cast up his fists. Every droplet, every infinitesimal bit of mist, winked into nothingness behind him. In the center of the hall, in a daze, Richard slumped to the floor, staring out at nothing. A malicious chuckle drifted through the winds. Richard knew who it was. His father was back to torment him again. "What's the matter, my son?" Darkenrall said in his derisive hiss. "Aren't you happy with my choice of a husband for your true love? My own son, my own flesh and blood, Drefn, wed to the mother confessor. I think it a good choice myself. He's a good boy." She seemed pleased. "But then, you already know that, don't you? You should be pleased that she is pleased. So very pleased." Darkenrall's laughter cavorted through the hall. Richard didn't bother to banish the luminous form standing over him. What did it matter? "So, what do you say, my wife? Shall we have a night of wild passion, like you showed my brother when you thought it me?" Colin used all her strength to ram her elbow into Drefn's sternum. She had caught him off guard. He hadn't expected that. He doubled over in pain, unable to get his breath. "I told you, Drefn, if you touch me, I'll cut your throat." Before he could recover to laugh at her anger or to taunt her with his threats of force, she slipped into her room, slammed the door, and threw the bolt. She stood trembling in the near darkness. She had felt something. For a moment, it had felt as if Richard was there with her. She had almost called out his name, screamed she loved him. She clutched her abdomen in agony. When would she ever stop thinking about him? Richard was never coming back. Colin crossed the thick carpets in her sitting room and went back into the bedroom. She dropped into a defensive crouch when someone stepped out in front of her.
Sorry, Verdine whispered. I didn't mean to frighten you.
Colin sighed as she unclenched her fists and rose to her feet.
Verdine!
She threw her arms around the woman.
Oh, Verdine, I'm glad to see you. How are you doing?
Verdine hugged Colin with a desperate need for comfort.
It's been a few weeks, but it seems as if Raina died only yesterday. I'm so angry with her for leaving me. And then when I get angry at her, I cry because I miss her so. If she would only have held on for a few more days, she would be alive now. Just a couple of days.
I know, Colin whispered. She parted from Verdine, keeping her voice low.
What are you doing here? I thought you went up to the keep to relieve Kara.
I did, but I had to come down to talk to you.
You mean the Slif is unguarded?
Verdine nodded.
Verdine, we can't leave her alone. We would never know if someone slipped into Aedendrill, someone with dangerous magic. That was what...
Verdine shushed her.
I know. This is important, too. Besides, what difference does it really make? Kara and I have lost our power. We couldn't stop someone with magic now if they did come through the Slif.
I have to talk to you, Mother Confessor, and I can never do it in the day because Drefin is always showing up.
Don't let him catch you calling him anything other than Lord Rawl, or he...
He isn't Lord Rawl. He isn't, Mother Confessor.
I know. But he's all the Lord Rawl we have.
Verdine looked Colin in the eye.
Kara and I have been talking. We decided we should kill him. We need you to help us.
We can't do that.
Colin gripped Verdine's shoulder.
We can't.
Sure we can. We'll hide out on the balcony. You get him out of his clothes so that he's away from those knives of his, and while you distract his attention, we'll burst in and end it.
Verdine, we can't.
Well, all right, if you're skittish about that plan, we can easily think of another. The point is, we have to kill him.
No, the point is, we can't kill him.
Verdine scowled.
Do you want to be married to that pig? Sooner or later, he's going to insist on his rights as your husband.
Verdine, listen to me. Even if he does that, I will have to endure it. I can endure rape if it means saving lives. We can't kill Drefin. He's the only Lord Rawl we have. Until we can figure out what to do, he is the only thing holding the army together. Right now they're confused by his aggressive command. The Harrens are used to being told what to do by Lord Rawl. Drefin is acting as if he is the Lord Rawl, and for the moment the army is scratching their heads, wondering if they're sure he isn't.
But he isn't!
Verdine insisted.
But at the moment, that's all that is holding the whole thing together. If it falls apart, then the Imperial Order will be able to roll right over the Midlands. Drefin is right about that much of it.
But you are the Mother Confessor. General Curson is loyal to you. Even without the bond, he sticks around because of you. Most of the officers do the same. Because of you, not Drefin. You could hold things together as well as Drefin. Maybe it would work.
And maybe not. I may not like Drefin, but he has done nothing to earn assassination. As much as I don't like his ways, he's doing his best to keep us all together. With him and me, we may be able to keep everyone together in this.
Verdine tilted her head closer.
It won't last, and you know it.
Colin wiped a hand across her face.
Verdine, Drefin is my husband.
I have sworn an oath to him. An oath, is it? Then why haven't you let him in your bed?
Colin opened her mouth, but couldn't find the words.
It's because of Lord Rawl, isn't it? You still think he's coming back, don't you? You want him to come back.
Colin put her fingertips to her lips. She turned away.
If Richard was going to come back, he'd have done so by now.
Maybe it's the plague. Maybe he isn't finished ridding the magic of the plague. Maybe when he's finished, he will return.
Colin hugged her arms to herself. She knew that wasn't it.
Mother Confessor, you do want him to return, don't you?
I'm married to Drefn. I have a husband.
That isn't what I asked you. You do want him to return. You must want him to come back.
Colin shook her head. He said he would always love me. He said his heart would always be mine. He promised.
Colin swallowed the anguish.
He walked away. I may have hurt him, but if he really loved me, he wouldn't do this to me. He'd have given me a chance.
But you still want him back.
No. I don't want ever to go through this kind of pain again. I don't want ever to leave myself open to this much hurt. I was wrong ever to let myself fall in love with him in the first place.
Colin shook her head again.
I don't want him to come back.
I don't believe you. You're just upset, as I get, because Raina died. But if she came back, I'd forgive her for dying and take her back in a heartbeat.
Not Richard. I'll not trust my heart to him again. Regardless of what I did, that doesn't make it right for him to hurt me as he did. He just walked away from me. And after he'd made promises of always loving me no matter what, he failed me in that test. I never thought he would hurt me like that. I thought my heart was safe with him no matter what, but it wasn't.
Verdine turned her around and gripped her shoulders.
Mother Confessor, you don't mean that. You don't. Trust works both ways. If you really loved him, then you must trust in him no matter what, just as you expected him to always trust in you.
Tears trickled down Colin's cheeks.
I can't, Verdine. It hurts too much. I'll not put myself through it again.
It doesn't matter anyway. It's been weeks. The plague is long over.
Richard is never coming back.
Look, I don't know exactly what happened up on the mountain, but you just ask yourself this. If the situation were reversed, if you were in his place, how would you feel?
Don't you think I'd do that every moment of every day? I know how I'd feel. I'd feel betrayed. I'd never forgive me if I were him. I'd hate me just as I know he does.
No, Verdine soothed. That isn't true. He doesn't hate you. Lord Rawl may be confused or hurt, but he could never hate you.
He does. He hates me for what I did. That's the other reason I can never take him back. I hurt him too much. How could I ever look him in the eye again? I couldn't. I could never ask him to trust me again.
Verdine circled an arm around Colin's neck and drew her to a shoulder.
Don't close your heart, Colin. Please don't do that. You are a sister of the Aegil. As your sister, I beg you not to do that.
It makes no difference,
Colin whispered.
I can't be with him anyway. No matter what I might think or wish or hope.
I must forget him. The spirits have forced me into marrying Drefn. I have given my oath to Drefn and to the spirits in trade to save lives. I must respect the oath I've given. Richard, too, must respect my oath.
Chapter 62
Wake him,
the voice in her head commanded. Verna cried out. It felt as though she was covered with wasps, and they were all stinging her at once. She frantically swiped at her arms, her shoulders, her legs, her face. She screamed in panic, swatting, swatting.
"Wake him!"
came the voice in her head again.
His Excellency's voice.
Verna snatched the cloth from the bucket. She turned Warren's head. He was sprawled forward on the table, unconscious. She dabbed the wet cloth on his cheeks, his forehead. With trembling fingers, she smoothed back his hair. He hadn't been out long, so she had a better chance to bring him around.
Warren! Warren, please, wake up! Warren!
He moaned in delirium. She pressed the wet cloth to his lips. She rubbed his back with her other hand as she kissed his cheek. It broke her heart to see him so afflicted with the pain, not only of the dream walker, but of the gift. Out of control. She pressed her fingers to the back of his neck and let a warm flow of Han seep into him, hoping it would give him strength, hoping it would bring him around.
Warren, she cried, please wake up. Please, for me, wake up, or His Excellency will be angry. Please, Warren.
Tears streamed down her face. She didn't care. She needed only to wake Warren, or His Excellency would make them both suffer. She had never known that resistance could be so futile. She had never known that she could so easily be made to betray everything in which she believed. She couldn't even protect those she loved by killing herself. She had tried. Oh, how she had tried. He wouldn't allow it. He wanted them alive so that they could serve him. He wished to use their talents. She now knew that it had to be true. Richard had to be dead. The bond to him was broken, and they were defenseless against the Dreamwalker. He intruded into her mind at will. With frightening ease, Jagang bent her to his wishes. It was as if she were no longer in control of the simplest of actions. If Jagang willed it, her arm lifted, and she could do nothing but watch. He controlled her use of her hand, too. Without the bond, she was powerless. Warren let out another groggy groan. He moved of his own accord at last. Only Verna seemed able to wake him when he passed out from the gift. That was the only reason Jagang hadn't sent her to the tents. Only his heart's connection to her was enough to stir Warren. She knew that it was harmful to wake him when the gift wanted him unconscious. It did that as a way to stretch his endurance until he could get proper help. But she had no choice. She was using their love to wake him, and in so doing was bringing him closer to death. But Jagang didn't care, as long as Warren did as ordered.
"Sorry," Warren mumbled. I couldn't."
"I know," Verna comforted. "I know.
Wake up now, Warren. His Excellency wants us to keep working. We have to keep working."
I can't. I can't, Verna. My head, please, Warren."
Verna couldn't control the tears. The pain of a thousand wasps stinging her everywhere at once made it impossible to hold still. She flinched constantly.
"Warren, you know what he'll do to us. Please, Warren, you must go back to the books. I'll carry them down. Just tell me which ones you need. I'll get them for you."
He nodded as he pushed himself up. He was becoming more alert. Verna slid the lamp near him and turned up the wick. She pushed close the volume he had been reading when he had passed out and tapped the page.
"Here, Warren, here. This is where you were. His Excellency wants to know what this means."
Warren pressed his fists to the sides of his head.
"I don't know. Please, Excellency, I don't know. I can't make the visions of prophecy come at will. I'm not a prophet yet. I'm only beginning."
Warren cried out, squirming in his chair.
"I'll try! I'll try! Please, let me try!"
Warren panted as his agony subsided. He bent over the book, licking his lips. Fingers shook as he set them to the book, following along the line of words, the line of prophecy.
"Patronizing past," he muttered as he read to himself. "Patronizing past carries forward the same disfavor twisted to new use for a new master. Dear Creator, I don't know what it means. Please, let the vision come."
Clarissa peered out into the darkness as the coach rocked to a stop. Dust hung in the air, their ghost-like escort. A stone fortress rose up just outside the coach's window. It was dark, and she couldn't see the whole thing, but what she could see made her heart pound out of control. She waited, twisting her fingers together, until the soldier opened the door.
"Clarissa," he whispered, "this is the place."
Clarissa took his hand as she stepped out into the inky night.
"Thank you, Walsh."
The other one of Nathan's soldier friends, a man named Bolliston, waited up in the driver's seat, keeping tight the reins.
"Hurry now," Walsh told her. "Nathan said he doesn't want you in there for more than a few minutes. If anything happens, the two of us aren't going to be able to fight much of a battle to get you out."
She knew the truth of that. They had ridden past so many tents that had left her stunned by their numbers. The horde who had overrun Renwald had been nothing compared to the numbers of men here. Clarissa pulled up the hood on her cloak.
"Don't you worry. I know better than to dally. Nathan told me what to do."
She clutched her cloak together in her fist. She had promised Nathan. He had done so much for her. He had saved her life.
She would do this for him. She would do this so others wouldn't die. As terrified as she was, she would do anything for Nathan. There was no better man in the whole world, no kinder man, no more compassionate, no braver. Walsh walked beside her as they passed under an iron portcullis and then into an entryway under a barreled roof. Two brutish guards, wearing hide mantles and hung with grisly-looking weapons, stood beside a hissing torch. Clarissa kept her cloak tightly drawn and her hood pulled forward. She hung her head so that the guards couldn't see her face in the shadow. She let Walsh do the talking, as she had been instructed. Walsh flicked his hand toward her.
"The representative of His Excellency's plenipotentiary, Lord Rawl," he said in a gruff voice, as if unhappy that this assignment had fallen to him.
The bearded guard grunted.
"Eh, so I've been told."
He lifted a thumb toward the door.
"Go on in. Someone is supposed to be waiting for you."
Walsh adjusted his weapons belt.
"Good. I have to drive this one back tonight. Can you believe it? Won't even let us wait until morning. That Lord Rawl is as demanding as they come."
The guard grunted as if he well understood the annoyance of night duty.
"Oh," Walsh added, as if in afterthought. "Lord Rawl also wanted to know if his representative could pay the Lord Rawl's respects to His Excellency."
The guard shrugged.
"Sorry, your gang took out of here this morning. He took most everyone with him, just left a few behind to mind things."
Clarissa's heart sank with disappointment. Nathan had been hoping that Chagang would be here, but he had said that even though he hoped it, Chagang would likely be smarter than that. Chagang wasn't one to trust his life to the unknown abilities of a wizard as powerful as Nathan. Walsh took Clarissa's arm and pushed her on ahead as he gave the guard a good-natured slap on the shoulder.
"Thanks. Yeah, just going down the hall. There's one of the women waiting there for you. Last I saw her, she was pacing by the second set of torches."
Walsh and Bolesden were Imperial Order soldiers, and they had had no trouble with any of the other soldiers either. Clarissa dreaded to think what would have happened to her without those two the times their coach had been stopped by troops to query its mission. Walsh and Bolesden also had little trouble ushering her through checkpoints. Clarissa remembered all too well what happened to the women in Renwald. She still had nightmares about what she had seen happening to Manda Perlin when the Order's troops captured Renwald. And right there, on the floor beside her murdered husband, Rupert. Their footsteps echoed as they hurried down the stone corridor. It was a dark, dank, and depressing place. It looked to Clarissa to have no comforts other than a few wooden benches. This was a place for soldiers, not a place for families to live. As the guard had said, the woman was waiting near the second set of torches.
"Yes?"
the woman asked.
"What is it?"
As Clarissa came to a stop before the woman, she could see in the torchlight that her face was badly battered. She had horrid-looking cuts and bruises. One side of her lower lip was swollen to twice normal size. Even Walsh moved back a little when he got a good look at her.
"I am to meet Sister Amelia. His Excellency's plenipotentiary sent me."
The woman slumped with relief.
"Good. I am Sister Amelia. I have the book. I hope never to see it again. His Excellency's plenipotentiary also told me that I am to pay his respects to an acquaintance of his, Sister Verna. Is she here?"
"Well, I don't know if I should. If I'm not allowed to see her, His Excellency will be most unhappy when his plenipotentiary reports how his request was so rudely treated by a slave. As a slave myself, serving His Excellency, I can tell you that I will not be the one to take the blame."
Clarissa felt foolish saying such words, but as Nathan had told her, they seemed to work magic. Sister Amelia's eyes fixed on the gold ring through Clarissa's lip. Her hesitation vanished.
"Of course. Please follow me. That is where the book is kept, anyway."
With Walsh close at her side and his hand near the hilt of his short sword, Clarissa followed Sister Amelia deeper into the gloomy fortress. They went down a long hall and then took a turn. Clarissa was paying careful attention as they went, so that if they had to get out fast, she wouldn't take a wrong route and be caught in here. Sister Amelia stopped before a door, glancing to Clarissa for just an instant before she lifted the lever and led them in. A woman and a man were in the room, he sitting at a simple plank table, reading a book laid open on the table, and she looking over his shoulder. The woman glanced up. She was a little older than Clarissa, and attractive, with curly brown hair. She looked to Clarissa to be a woman of authority, crushed by humiliation. She looked in agony. Whether it was physical or emotional, Clarissa didn't know. Sister Amelia held out a hand.
Is Verna?
Verna straightened. She had a gold ring in her lip, the same as Sister Amelia, the same as Clarissa. The man, his curly, blonde hair in disarray, didn't look up. He seemed frantically absorbed in his book.
"Pleased to meet you," Clarissa said.
Verna turned back to the man and the book he was studying. Clarissa pushed back her hood as she turned to Sister Amelia.
"The book?"
Sister Amelia bowed.
"Of course, it's right here."
She scurried to a shelf. The room wasn't large. One of the stone block walls had a crudely built shelf holding books. There were perhaps no more than 100. Nathan had been hoping there would be a great many more. As Nathan had expected, though, Jagang wouldn't keep many of his prizes together in one place. Sister Amelia pulled a volume from a shelf and placed it on the table. She looked to be uncomfortable, even touching it.
"This is it."
The cover was as Nathan had described it to her, a strange black that seemed to absorb the light from the room. Clarissa flipped open the cover.
"What are you doing?"
Sister Amelia cried out as she stepped closer. Clarissa looked up.
"I was instructed how to make sure it is the right book. Please leave it to me."
Sister Amelia stepped back, wringing her hands together.
"Of course, but I can tell you only too well that it's the right book. It's the one His Excellency agreed to."
Clarissa carefully turned over the first page as Sister Amelia nervously licked her lips. Verna watched from the corner of her eye. Clarissa reached inside her cloak and pulled out the little leather pouch of powder Nathan had given her. She sprinkled it over the open page. Words began to appear. "Assigned to the Winds by Wizard Ricker." It was the book she had come for. Nathan hadn't known the name of the wizard, but he had told her it would say, "Assigned to the Winds," and then a name. She flipped the cover closed.
"Sister Amelia, would you leave us for a moment, please?"
The woman bowed and quickly scurried out of the room. Verna frowned as she straightened again.
"What's this about? May I see your ring, please?"
"My ring?" Verna finally sighed and held out her hand, showing Clarissa the ring on her third finger. It had the sunburst pattern, as Nathan had described.
"Why do you want to see?"
For the first time, Verna noticed Clarissa's guard. Her eyes went wide. She jostled Warren's shoulder while she spoke.
"Walsh?"
Warren's head came up. Walsh smiled.
"How are you doing, prelate?"
"Warren?"
"Not very well."
Clarissa stepped closer. The man, Warren, was looking very puzzled.
"I was sent by Lord Rawl to get this book."
Clarissa gave Verna and Warren both a meaningful look.
"I am bonded to Lord Rawl."
"Richard is dead,"
Verna said in a flat whisper.
"I know, but I was sent by Lord Rawl, Nathan Rawl, the master of Tahara. He wanted me to pass along his regards."
Verna's mouth fell open. Warren's chair skidded across the floor as he rushed to his feet.
"Do you understand?"
Clarissa carefully asked.
"If you do, then you had better be quick about it."
"But, Nathan, we couldn't..."
"Well," Clarissa said, "I must be getting back to Lord Rawl. He's waiting for me. I have a coach, and I must be leaving at once."
Verna's eyes turned up to Walsh. He gave her a nod. Verna fell to her knees. She snatched Warren's violet robes and yanked him down beside her.
"Do it, Warren!"
She folded her hands together as she bowed her head. Her words spilled out.
"Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours."
Warren spoke the words too, just a little in her wake. Verna knelt frozen for a moment, her hands still folded together prayerfully. She suddenly let out a cry of joy. She laughed like a madwoman.
Thanks, Creator. My prayers have been answered. I'm free. He's gone. I can feel that he's gone from my mind.
Clarissa sighed in relief. Nathan had warned her that if Verna failed to do as they had hoped, she would have to die here.
Verna and Warren hugged as they wept with joy. Clarissa seized them both and urged them up.
We have to get out of here, but Lord Rawl wants me to do something else first. I need to look for some books.
Books?
Warren asked. What books?
Mountain's Twin, Celeron's Seventh Task, The Book of Inversion in Duplex, and 12 Words Left for Reason.
Warren turned to the book on the table.
12 Words, that's this one here. I think I saw a couple of the others.
Clarissa went to the shelves.
Help me look. Nathan wants to know if they are here. He needs to know.
They all scanned the titles on the spines and had to pull out several that weren't marked so as to check their titles. They found all but The Book of Inversion and Duplex. Clarissa brushed the dust from her hands.
That will have to do. Nathan said that they might not all be here. With only one missing, that's better than we could have hoped. What does Nathan want with these books?
Warren asked.
He doesn't want Jagang to have them. He says that they're dangerous for Jagang to have.
They all could be dangerous, Verna said.
Let me worry about that, Clarissa said, as she slipped the book from the table back into an empty slot. Nathan just needed to know which were here. Now we can leave.
Verna clutched Clarissa's sleeve.
I have 2 friends here. We have to get them out with us. You said you have a coach. We can all go.
Who? Walsh asked.
Janet and Amelia.
Walsh let out a knowing grunt as Clarissa glanced to the door.
But Nathan said, look, if they give their oath to Lord Rawl also, they can escape.
Verna touched the ring in Clarissa's lip.
You don't know what they do to the women here. Did you see Amelia's face?
I know what they do,
Clarissa whispered, remembering the scenes in Renwald.
Will they take the oath?
Of course. Wouldn't you, if it would get you away from here?
Clarissa swallowed.
I'd do anything.
Hurry, then, Walsh said. There's room in the coach, but we have to hurry.
Verna nodded and then slipped out the door. While Verna went to get the other 2, Clarissa unhooked the clasp on the fine gold chain around her neck. Warren watched with a frown as Clarissa pulled a book from a lower shelf and then set it on the table. Clarissa placed the locket on the shelf in the empty slot. Carefully, she laid open the locket. With her fingers, she gently pushed it all the way back against the wall. She wiggled her fingers at Warren. He handed back the book she had removed. Clarissa slid it back into its place.
What did you do?
Warren asked.
What Nathan wanted me to do.
Verna burst back into the room, holding the hands of 2 beaming women. One was the one with the battered face, Sister Amelia.
They've given the oath,
Verna said in a breathless voice.
They are bonded to Lord Rawl. Let's get out of here.
About time, Walsh said.
He had a little smile on his face for Verna. It was obvious to Clarissa that they knew each other. Walsh took a hold of Clarissa's arm, and the 2 of them led out the rest to retrace their route back through the fortress. The dark, dripping stone smelled of rot. They saw only a few guards inside the stronghold, most people having left along with Jagang, gone to his huge tents. Nathan said that Jagang traveled with a large contingent of people, and that he had big, round tents with all the comforts of a palace. Of the people left behind, there seemed to be a scattering of officers and guards and a few of the women who were slaves to Jagang and his army. As they came around a corner, one of these slaves was coming the other way, carrying 2 steaming kettles of what smelled like lamb stew. She was dressed the same as the other women Clarissa had seen, except Verna. The clothes they wore, like Janet and Amelia, were not clothes as far as Clarissa was concerned. The women might as well have been naked for all the good those transparent garments did. When the woman looked up and saw them coming, especially Walsh, she immediately stepped to the side of the hall, out of their way. Clarissa jerked to a halt, staring at the woman, whose gaze fixed on the floor.
Manda, Clarissa whispered. Manda Perlin, is that you?
Manda looked up.
Yes, mistress. Manda, it's me, Clarissa, from Renwald. I'm Clarissa.
The young woman looked up the length of Clarissa at her expensive gown, at her jewelry, at her hair all done in ringlets. Manda's gaze met Clarissa's, and her eyes widened.
Clarissa, is it really you?
Yes.
I don't hardly recognize you. You look so different. You look so...
The spark went out of her expression.
Were you captured back home, too, then? I see the ring.
No, I wasn't captured.
Manda's eyes filled with tears.
Oh, good. I'm so glad they didn't get you there. It was...
Clarissa hugged the young woman. Manda had never spoken this many words to her in all the years Clarissa had known her, and the words she had spoken hadn't been decent. Clarissa had always hated Manda for the cruel words, the cruel smirks, the condescending glances. Now Clarissa felt sorrow for her.
Manda, we have to go. Would you like to come away with us?
Verna snatched Clarissa's arm.
We can't do that.
Clarissa glared at Verna. I came here to rescue you. I let you take your friends with us. I want to take my friend out of here, too. Verna sighed and let go of Clarissa's arm.
Of course.
Friend?
Manda whined as her face twisted with untold sorrow.
Yes,
Clarissa said.
I could get you out of here, too.
You would do that for me? After all the times I...
Sobbing, Manda threw her arms around Clarissa.
Oh, yes. Oh, Clarissa, please. Oh, Clarissa, please let me go with you.
Clarissa gripped the woman's wrists and pushed her away.
Then listen carefully. I give you only one chance. My master has magic to protect your mind from the dreamwalker. You must swear an oath to him. You must be loyal to him.
Manda fell to her knees, clutching at Clarissa's dress.
Yes, I swear.
This is the end of Side 1, Part B. There is no need to change the balance control. Simply turn this cassette to Side 2 and continue with Part B.